Hey, welcome back to Endpoint TV. I'm your host, Ron Jacobs, once again with Leon Wielicki, here for part five. Yes, we have so much amazing content about building activities. It's really great to have you back again, Leon.
Thank you very much for having me here.
All right, so where do we begin on part five?
We will start on some tricks for sound serialization.
Okay, and now this is really cool because even though you're authoring your code in C# or VB or whatever, your activities are going to get serialized as XAML.
Right.
And you might think, who cares? What happens, what it looks like in XAML? But what happens in XAML matters. You should care.
Absolutely. And yeah. Especially the designer, when you use that activities that you created with the designer,
yeah,
they will be serialized to XAML.
Yeah, right.
That's the format in which the tree is represented. So
what are some things I should care about in XAML?
The idea of these best practices is to create types that are friendly with XAML.
Okay.
And also that have a nice XAML representation.
Okay, good.
So let's go on the guidelines.
Okay.
And you'll see in a minute why the things are important.
Okay, great.
So, first of all, the first one, do use the create set use pattern for your activity types.
What is that pattern?
It's having the public constructor and getter and setters.
Yeah.
So you create types that are friendly with XAML serialization.
Okay, so I don't want a constructor that takes a bunch of arguments and things like that. I mean, that's not going to work. And you do have a public constructor.
You may have a constructor if you want. You can provide overloads of the constructor.
Yeah.
But you also need to have a default constructor as well.
Okay, I need a default constructor with my properties having getters and setters.
Yes.
So XAML will happily serialize me and all that. If I don't have a default public constructor, this is not going to work.
Yeah, and if you see all our activities, for example, in the framework, you'll see that all implement this pattern.
Yeah.
All have a public constructor and getter and setters for the arguments or things that you need to set from the designer.
Okay, that makes sense.
And some activities do have some special constructors that allow you to, if you want to write them in code, provide you a better experience for
So you can have both, but you should have at least the public. Okay, good.
Yeah, one thing does not invalidate the other.
Okay. So what's the next one?
The next one is consider using default value null, like is shown here in the in the presentation, to avoid serializing unnecessary properties.
Okay, so what does that mean?
This is what happens. Sometimes you may have a public signature for your activity with many properties.
Right.
So when your activity gets serialized, if you don't set them, all of them will be serialized with your as part of your activity representation with a null curly braces null.
So you're going to show us an example of this.
Yeah, I'll show you in a minute.
Okay. All right.
So if you add this, if you decorate your argument with this attribute, it won't be serialized if it's not set.
So it keeps the size of the XAML a little smaller.
But also, let's say that you have arguments that you're not very sure about your signature.
Mm-hmm.
You have an argument that you're not very sure if you want to keep it or not.
Okay.
So you do the first version of your activity with that argument. And it gets serialized.
Yeah.
But it's never set.
Right? And then later you remove it.
You remove it, but that's been serialized as part of your activity definition. Yeah. So you won't be able to load it into the designer
again. Yeah, now those XAMLs are going to blow up.
Yeah.
Okay, so that's good. Now, all right, what's the next one here?
The next one is consider using the depends on to control the order of the property serialization. And what happens is, let's say that you have your activity.
Yeah.
Right? And you have three arguments or n arguments.
Yeah.
Arguments will be serialized in alphabetical order.
Okay.
So, or members, actually.
Yeah.
So let's say you have try catch.
Yeah.
By default, try catch is serialized as catch, finally try. That's a XAML rep for try catch.
Yeah, okay. And you might think, well, who cares? Nobody's ever going to look at the XAML. But you shouldn't think that, because people will look at the XAML.
Will, or let's say that you want to do some tool to analyze the XAML.
Yeah.
So you I don't know. I mean, there are endless uses for that. So.
Yeah.
And, or consider if then else also. Is else, then.
Yeah,
so,
else if and then, right? Yeah, that would be a little weird. Yeah.
So with the depends on, what you can do is you can say what is the order.
Mm-hmm.
You can control the order, the serialization order for the members of your activity.
Okay.
We'll see a demo of this in a minute.
Okay. Good.
Another one is use the content property in composite activities.
Okay.
With the content property, what you can do is you can say what will be the default element that you will have in the body.
Okay.
So you don't need to add like a tag around it.
Oh, okay. So when you look at the XAML, you see like an activity, and then inside of it is just some other activities, but there's no tag that says like these are the child activities or anything like that.
Exactly.
That's because it's the content property.
That's right. For example, in the sequence, yeah. if you look at the SAML for a sequence, you'll see that it has a sequence tag and then all the children activity.
Right.
The reason for not having that activities collection in the SAML is because activities is the content property for sequence.
Oh, okay, okay. So I didn't know what that was about, but that makes sense. So that just makes your XAML a little easier to follow or understand. Okay.
Right. And we have like two sub-bullets here that I would like to go through. Like when to decide how to use the content property.
Okay.
These are things that we used when we were building the Dev 10 activities. If it has a body property, if your activity has a body property, consider making it the content property.
Okay.
For example, for while or cancellation scope or transaction scope, that body activity, that body member, we should consider making it the content property. And I'm saying consider, and not saying strongly do that, because maybe your signature is more complex, and you have to analyze each case.
Right, right, okay.
On a case-by-case basis.
And if you just made, like, if you have a body and somebody tries to put two things in the XAML, well, the XAML will blow up when it you know, because you only have a body. You support one thing, not two.
Yes. You need to put a composite activity and then put that two things inside of that body.
Yeah, right, right. Okay.
And if it has child or children collection, if it has a child or a children collection, consider making it the content property.
Okay.
An example of this is sequence and parallel.
Right.
For both activities, the activities collection is the content property.
Okay. Okay. Good.
Let's do a quick demo.
Yeah. Cool.
Take a look at some of these concepts. So, let's run this. We have here, the first that we will see is the depends on activity. So, I have an if activity.
Yeah.
Not this one, I'm sorry. An if then else activity.
Okay.
That has an expression and then an else.
Okay.
Notice that I call it expression instead of condition.
Yeah.
Just to make it worse.
Oh, okay.
To make it worse.
All right.
So, if I SAML serialize this activity,
right.
This is what I will get. Else, expression, then.
Yeah. So that's not very friendly.
It's not what I would expect, right?
Yeah.
So let's see how can we fix this.
Okay.
The way in which we can fix this, I have to go out of this, is adding some depends on arguments. And this is how it works. I will say that the then depends on the expression.
Okay.
Meaning that the then will be serialized after this expression.
Right.
And I would say that the else depends on the then.
Okay.
Meaning that the else will be serialized after the then. So let me run this thing again with only this small change.
Yeah.
And you'll see how now I have first the expression, after that the then, and then the else.
That makes a lot of sense. Cool. All right.
It's a simple thing to do, but very useful.
Okay. And then we set the default value.
The default value. So let's see what we are going to be doing here. I'll show you first what happens, and then we will go to the code.
Okay.
I have an ismatch activity that does the regular expression ismatch.
Right.
And it has an input and a pattern.
Yeah.
In this case, in my workflow, I didn't set the input. So the input is serialized as this.
Yeah.
So I will change my activity. So when I serialize it, if the input is not set, it will not be included in the SAML representation.
Right. And so, of course, keeping the XAML smaller is also a good thing because it means I can load faster.
Yep. So one thing that I can do here, is say default value equals null. And that's the only thing that I need to do in order to fix it. Now, when I serialize the representation of the activity, the input will not be included.
And of course, the default value could be anything. It could be X or null or whatever, you know.
I put null because I'm if it's not set, instead of putting the null, just.
Right, right. Cool.
What you have.
Okay.
Great. So I'll move forward.
Yeah, let's move forward.
Execution properties.
Okay. Now, we talked about these scope activities before, right? Cancellation scope or transaction scope and those kind of things. These are kind of activities that use this execution properties.
Yeah,
right?
Some of them do. The idea of execution properties is having a way to share some data, since, I mean, workflow does not have any thread affinity, so you can use thread local storage for sharing data. With execution properties, you can put some data that will be shared between all the activities in the workflow.
Ah, okay.
Actually, it's not between all the activities arbitrarily. It's between ancestors and descendant activities. I mean, it has to do with the hierarchy and the lexical, lexical scope tree that we have.
So if I wanted to put something that any of the activities that were contained inside of my thing, if I wanted to put something like, a connection string, maybe might be an example for, like, I'm going to do a bunch of database work, and I want to share a connection string amongst all these things. I could use an execution property to store that? Is that a bad example?
I wouldn't use it for that.
Okay.
Because you could use an argument or a CLR property like we discussed before. But I'll read the second the guidance, and I'll tell you some concrete
examples from
the framework. So consider using execution properties to share data between ancestor and descendant activities.
Okay.
Consider using execution properties to set ambient properties.
Okay.
Like you said before, right?
Like a transaction.
Yeah, for example. Do use well-known constant for execution properties name.
Okay.
So if you have an execution property, because you have to give it a name, instead of giving any name, use like sort of namespace activity dot the name that you want to give it.
Ah, all right. All right.
Like, do use a name that looks like a fully qualified type name.
Oh, I see. Okay.
So, regarding the, let's go one by one on the sharing.
Okay.
I'll give you a concrete example from the framework.
Okay.
Try-catch activity.
Ah, right.
One thing that we have in the try-catch is that we have the ability of adding a re-throw activity in a catch. What the re-throw activity does is throw the last exception that happened.
Right.
It's like having a throw without arguments in a catch.
Right.
But how does the re-throw know about the last exception?
It's an execution property.
It's an execution property that is set by the try-catch activity.
Ah, I see. Okay.
Another example for the ambient properties.
Yeah.
For, we have in the SDK, in the workflow for samples, we have some entity framework activities.
Okay.
There's one activity that is called object context scope that sets a context, an object context scope so the rest of entity framework-based activities can use.
Ah, okay. Okay, that's a good one.
That activity sets the scope, I mean the object context scope, inside of an execution property that its child activities can get and use.
Okay, because you have to share the object context amongst all the entity framework code. Okay, oh, good, good, all right. That makes good sense, okay.
Validation.
Ah, yes.
So, do use required arguments attribute.
Okay. With,
the required arguments attribute is an attribute that you can put in your arguments.
Yeah.
And as a result, it will we will check that that argument has been set.
Right.
It won't be checking the value. It will check that it has been set to something.
That there's some kind of expression text, but it might be totally invalid. So you later you have to evaluate at runtime what you got from the expression.
Right.
But at least it knows you got something.
It's not about the contents of the expression.
Yeah.
It's about having an expression bound to that argument.
Right, okay.
And actually, there's a tip here that I should have put near the required arguments, because you cannot assume that the required argument that is required is set. I mean, you cannot assume that it won't yield a null in execute.
Right, because they could give you an expression that calls a method that returns null.
Null. So you may, it might be set.
Yeah.
You may want to use it, and you will get a null argument exception.
Right. Okay.
A no reference exception.
Yeah.
During execution. So sometimes it's a good idea to check your arguments.
Exactly.
In the execute method before using them.
Well, yeah. So it's just like anytime in your execute method, you know, just like in any code, when somebody hands you an argument, you can't assume anything about it. You validate it, right?
Sort of defensive programming or something like that. Yeah.
Okay.
And another interesting thing of the required argument is that once you set the required argument attribute in your argument, if it's not set, the error will surface in the designer. You don't have to do anything.
Yeah.
You just set the attribute, and the framework will take care of everything for you.
That's nice. Okay.
So you will see that. You don't even have to set the error message. It will be taken care of for you.
Okay.
Everything. Just putting the argument, and it just works.
Good. Okay.
Then, Let me go to the second. Consider using overload groups for sets of arguments that need to be set together.
Okay.
Overload group is another feature of our validation framework.
Mm-hmm.
And the idea of overload groups is to identify sets of arguments that need to be set together.
Mm.
Let me give you an example.
Mm-hmm.
You have a database access activity.
Right.
And you want to make sure that if you set a connection string, you also set the provider.
Okay.
So you can create an overload group with the connection string and the provider.
Yeah.
And until both are not set, you will get a validation error.
Okay.
Even you can have multiple overload groups in your activity.
Right.
So in that database access activity, you could have one overload group with the connection string
mm-hmm.
and the provider name, or another overload group that has a key in the configuration file.
Right.
So you either set one or the other.
Yeah.
And if you decide to set one of both, you will have to complete all the properties in the overload group.
Okay.
To be valid.
Okay. I see. Good.
All this doesn't require writing any code. It's just decorating your arguments with these attributes.
Right, right.
So there are some rules that we used in Workflow 4 to decide when to yield an error, when to yield a warning,
okay.
or when to do nothing.
Okay.
If you use Workflow 4 Beta 1,
yeah.
for the ones who used it, it was yielding a lot of warnings.
Ah.
I don't know if you recall that if you have an empty sequence, it was a warning.
Oh, right, right.
If you had an empty body, an empty body in a while, it was a warning.
Yeah.
So what we found out that you just create a workflow and you had a warning.
Yeah.
Just with the empty template.
I just started and I got a warning already.
And at some point you get so much warnings that they were completely useless.
Yeah.
And they were hiding the actual errors that you could have.
Okay.
So what we try to do is to rationalize when we do a warning, when we do an error, and when we do nothing, so we can have more meaningful information to the user that is using workflow, that is authoring a workflow.
Okay.
And these are the three rules that we came up with.
Okay.
Do return error when there is no Do return error when there is no reasonable interpretation for the activity given the settings on the activity or the environment.
Okay.
Meaning that you won't be able to run that activity.
Yeah.
You know that will fail, so in that case, that's an error.
Okay.
For example, a delay without the...
Without a time.
Without a time.
Yeah.
Invoke method, invoking a method that does not exist.
Right.
Run signature.
Okay.
And misconfigure send activity when the endpoint is not well set. I don't know.
Okay.
Consider. And this is a consider because here we enter a bit in the subjective camp.
Yeah.
This requires analysis. Considering returning a warning when there is a reasonable way to interpret the activity, but we are not fully confident that the interpretation chosen will be obvious.
Okay.
So it might work, it might not. For example, an empty sequence, I know that's not a warning, right?
Right.
Because it will work.
Yeah. It will do nothing.
Yeah. And that's an
and that's
right?
reasonable. I mean, and that's what, and that would be obvious. The obvious behavior is it does nothing and it's reasonable, yeah.
Yeah, so that's not a warning. That's why...
Right.
That falls on the third guideline, that is, do not return errors or warning if there is a reasonable interpretation for the activity. Like, helpful usage errors like empty sequence.
You might want to put something in your sequence. You know, that's not a great warning.
Your else is empty, right? You have an if then, and sometimes you may not want to put anything in the else. But we were saying, okay, your else is empty.
Yeah.
I know. I just have it then, logically.
Yeah, actually, there's not very many warnings in the framework activities anymore.
Actually, as the result of this, we don't have any warning now. We didn't got anything that qualifies as our warnings.
Okay.
So we ended up having errors or do nothing. That the do nothing action was removing the unnecessary, like, the not helpful messages.
No, that makes sense. Okay, good. Now, we have a little code sample of the validation, right? Let's go look at the code sample.
Yeah, let's go to the code sample for that. So, we have a send mail activity. And in this send mail activity, what we do, actually, we are not taking care of the execute method. We don't care about it right now. What we are going to be working on is in validating the public signature of that
right.
activity.
Right, okay.
So, it has a from CLR property that has the address of the person that will send the mail.
Right.
This goes back to something that we discussed in a previous episode
right.
on CLR properties versus arguments.
Yeah.
In this case, this string will be the same for all the instances of this activity.
So this would be like if I did a send mail class in code, I might declare the from address as a const in my class because it's always from the same one.
When I add the activity to this discerning surface and set the from, that will be the same for all the instances of that definition.
Right, okay.
Then I have the to, that is an argument, that will change from execution to execution of this activity. And in this case, what I'm trying to do is to make these two required.
Okay.
Because I always want to know, I always want to have a destination address for my...
Right, okay.
So, I have here a sequence that consumes that activity. And sorry, it's already in use. So let's remove this and just use it. We'll drop it here.
Nothing.
We build.
There we go.
As you can see, we have the error.
Good.
So even further, if I go to the send mail, as you can see in the error, I see value for a required activity argument 2 was not supplied.
Right, okay.
If I go to the send mail.
Now, if we wanted to validate from.
And add this to those ones. Sorry.
Yeah.
Real quick. And build again. You'll see that the error list that I'm having now is more expensive.
Okay, it gets bigger.
It gets bigger. Now, from, we cannot validate with required argument because it's a CLR property.
Okay, so how would we validate that?
So in that case, what we will do is we will add some code in cache metadata.
Okay.
Because we know its value in advance, right?
Yeah.
I already have this code written. So if from is null or empty, I will add a validation error.
Right.
Now, if it's not null or empty, I will check that it's a valid email address.
Okay.
And if it's not, I will add a validation error.
Oh, cool. All right.
So let me show real quick. Just compile this. Notice that I added all this code in cache metadata.
Yeah.
I go here. Say from is required. Now, what I want to do is to validate that the from is a proper email address.
Okay.
So that's something really bad.
All right. But that's definitely not proper.
It's not proper. And you can see the validation error that I'm having is that an invalid character was found in the email header.
Well, cool. All right, well, that's it. That gives us some good tools. We have even more that we'll do some other time in the future. Thanks once again, Leon, for coming and joining us. And we'll see you next time on Endpoint TV.